kind of spread out here. I have beverage up morning and beverages afternoon.
Okay, everybody got a microphone on. But I say it to remind myself, yes, we want one whole session with me not having my microphone off. It's for me. Okay. You did too?
Yeah.
Somebody else.
I thought I did too. I, at least for part of it, was it yesterday, and I realized, okay.
So. What is that? Good afternoon.
Do you have
your microphone on?
Yeah.
We're just all testing out who didn't have their microphones at various parts of their session.
How you
doing? Okay. Well, we are recording. So it is January 15th, 2020, and at 1:30 p.m. we're in the public meeting room at the Story County Administration Building. We're in the budget work session for FY21 for community services. So we will state for the record who's in attendance here, starting with people here at the table. Linda Merkin, Chair, Board of Supervisors.
Sandra Kane, Director of External Operations and County Services.
Laura Solson, Board of Supervisors.
Lucy Martin, Auditor.
Lisa Hedems, Board of Supervisors.
Alyssa Wignall, Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources.
Lisa Markley, Assistant Auditor.
Erin Rework, Story County Community Services.
Carla Webb, Community Services Director.
Thank you. As you know, I'm just going to say a few things before we get started. As you know, the board is primarily responsible to fund mandated services. We also fund very, very important services. One purpose of the budget work sessions is for us to obtain information to help us prioritize our best use of taxpayer funds. It's also your opportunity to explain to us the value to Story County residents of the various items in your request. Specifically, we're going to ask that you address your projected revenues and expenditures and explain any difference in trends that you've noticed. Regarding operating budgets, the direction was that all offices and departments should continue to lower expenses and streamline operations whenever possible, and not to increase operating expenses unless justified by current expenditure rates or known increases for the next year. As I think you know, in the last few years, the board has asked the department heads to do this, the various agencies, and we have also stated that we understand that unanticipated things do come up, and if they do come up, we are certainly willing to consider adding money to a budget if it's needed with good justification. I think that's a very good way to operate in terms of responsible budgeting, and I think all the other supervisors, we're all in agreement that that's the way we want to continue operating, because it makes for the best budgeting for all concerned. Personnel, new staff will likely not be considered unless there's a clearly demonstrable need and a cost-benefit analysis, which produces a positive benefit for the county. And as you know, that helps us explain to the taxpayers, you know, why we decided this was the best use of their funds. We know there's a position that was in the budget last year, is in the budget, but has not been, is approved the right word? Okay. So maybe if you go through that later and give us a history of that position and where you are on that now. But what we'd like to do is have you first address your revenues, and then your expenses, and then the new position. We should be able to get through all the requests today. If not, we might have to have a call back, but I don't think we will. We'll all try to be brief and efficient in terms of our questions and ask you to do the same in terms of your responses, and we'll efficiently get through this, I think, within an hour or so. So unless there's any other questions, well, first, let's see. Do either the supervisors have anything that you would like to say?
No.
Okay. I've been saying this at the beginning of every session. So when Lisa Markley did her initial projections for fiscal year 21, the amount of revenue that anticipated, right, at the specific date that she ran it, if there were no additional tax askings from what we're asking for this year, and the amount of all the requests was about $3 million difference. However, that doesn't include, for one thing, all of the various conservation reserve accounts, et cetera, put into revenue. And so you know, having been here before, that where you start out isn't where you end up. So Just want everybody to know. Okay.
So if it's okay with you, we will ask questions when you're on, if you're on a certain line item explaining it, and we have a question, we'll ask it then rather than waiting until the end.
Great.
And Ms. Markley, did you have anything you wanted to add?
The yellow sheet in front of you is 50% of the year. So it's 50% of revenues and 50% of expenses for use here today.
If that helps at all.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. So let's begin.
So we'll start with the community services budget. And I noticed this yesterday when I was preparing. We had re-estimated miscellaneous revenue at $40. However, I don't anticipate getting that 40 in this. So my suggestion would be if we move that to zero. And the other health fees, and both of these line items here are kind of placeholders. The other health fees revenue, that is if we're working with somebody through the SSI interim program, if they do get approved for Social Security benefits, then we can recoup what the assistance we provided. So that's kind of just been a placeholder. We do not currently have anyone on the SSI interim program. We're considering one individual at this time.
Thank you. Any questions about revenue?
I guess I do have one question. So you re-estimated down to zero from fiscal year 20. Are you're wanting to stay at the $100 for fiscal year 21 as a placeholder?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. You can probably start on vehicle fuels and maintenance there if you'd like to on that next page. And I'm sure they'll talk position when it's all.
So this is, we did purchase the new vehicle, and so this is kind of the way we're working this right now for reimbursement on those is claims, we are charging, claims are coming out of the community services budget to pay for fuel for those vehicles, and then we're charging back to CICS for usage that was done within that month by service coordinators, by myself as a technical to CICS. So the initial expenses coming out of the community services budget, we do charge to the VA budget as well as the support office uses the vehicles and also charge to that based on actual utilization. So then we are seeing some revenue come back into the county from CICS for
which is in countywide revenue.
So we have certainly noticed a decrease in our overall vehicle expenses with the purchase of the new vehicle. So it is very reliable, and of course they're under warranty.
How many vehicles do you have?
We have two.
Two.
Mm-hmm. Office supplies, no changes there. Postage and mailing, we could bump that up a little bit. We do share expenses with VA as well as within mental health in regards to office supplies and the postage meter.
So the claims come across coded to the three different budgets, basically.
Any questions on those? Mm-hmm. So for hospital care, medical care, medicine, food and provisions, we've had $100 in each of those line items just as a placeholder. We don't.
I'm sorry, just where are you at?
Sorry, did I move to the
HR? Yeah, education and training.
Oh, okay. Yep, sorry.
So education and training, I have a question about, I see, you know, if you pretty much put the average or whatever, but it seems like a low amount given you guys have continuing education credits, don't you, to keep up and whatever? So
we do. For any training that our service coordinators attend, that is generally paid through CICS. So these would be trainings for staff who are funded out of the general fund dollars, so CRN. I am looking at having a couple of staff attend the Iowa Department of Public Health substance abuse training, but we share those costs with CICS because they're covering both substance abuse as well as mental health.
Okay.
That helps to keep those costs down.
Thank you.
Any other questions on education? So we have a little bit there for employee mileage, the communication services, and then the equipment rent and maintenance. That is going to be our copier cost. And again, that's spread out over MHDS and VA. So then on down to the medical care, hospital care, and medicine, food and provision. The $100 that we have there, that has historically been just a placeholder. We haven't seen expenses there. If somebody is in need of medicines or medical care and that, we're trying to get them connected with presumptive eligibility with Medicaid or getting them referred to primary health care, helping them to get their needs met through what's available presently within the community. And as far as food and provision, just helping them get assisted or get connected with food pantries and that as well. So then next to rent payments, we are bumping this up and our re-estimate is up a little bit on that. I think our re-estimate is probably spot on as to where we're at right now through the end of December. I think that'll probably be about the mark that we hit.
Now, and this is at the current scale, right?
Yes. And we have been working through looking at the income guidelines that you would say as well as if we did a rent increase, what that would come out to be. We've collected the data, and I think we'll be looking to come back to the board probably near the end of February, along with the increase in that information.
Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, this is just based on current amounts right now. For utilities, I think we're probably on track at the $5,400 for the re-estimate there as well for what we've expended through December. This can ebb and flow. Sometimes we tend to see, as we get through winter, we'll see individuals coming in with higher utility bills because maybe they have not been paying on their utilities throughout the winter. They do need to either get payment plan in place to get that utility caught up or work with other community agencies to get that taken care of. But we do start to see larger utility bills. Of course, due to utilization in the winter months, that drives up the cost as well. For funeral services, on average right now we're funding 16 funerals per year. I believe we've through January paid for 9 funerals. So this, again, it's hard to predict, hard to know for sure what you're gonna see, but we did bump it up a little bit there for 21 for a 2% increase. Historically, a 2% increase has been provided to the funeral home each fiscal year. So we've incorporated that again this year. Emergency assistance, that item is no longer needed. That was the funding for residents who were leaving Crestview Mobile Home Park. So that, on our end, has wrapped up, so that's no longer needed. Then the management services for transportation, we've re-estimated that down. I feel like we're seeing lower and lower utilization of this service. Historically, though, we have tended to more folks applying for that during the winter months. Because it is for transient individuals who are passing through the state or looking to leave the state. So a lot of times, you know, they're trying to move on to a different destination because it's a little better weather. And that's a once in a lifetime assistance. So once we've provided that help to somebody, that's all we're able to do.
Any questions on the number?
Okay, so hospital care, this is a mandate for the county. We really have not seen utilization of this with expanded Medicaid. A lot of folks are covered for hospital care. So that, and this also too, with closing of Mount Pleasant MHI, actually these funds are, should someone be committed at an MHI for substance abuse treatment, that's where the funding would come from, is out of that line item. The next one, the inpatient hospital, that's for a 3 to 5 day detox, and that's where we're really not seeing the claims come in for, because folks do have coverage through Medicaid there. But these are, again, are just placed, they've been placeholders at $1,000. We know, should we need to pay a claim, we're looking at least $800-$900 for us for a hospital for one day. So should we have something come through there, we may need to look at amending the budget. The next line item for transportation. So this is a mandate for county substance abuse commitments. Currently, we do periodically see where another sheriff's department has provided transportation or served papers for an individual who is located outside of Story County, and it just makes sense rather than our sheriff's office serving that paper up in Hamilton County, they may have Hamilton County Sheriff's Office serve it if that's where the individual is at. We have, through outreach from the sheriff's office to us, they've approached us about seeing if we could look at contracting with other entities to provide that commitment transport if the sheriff's office were to designate that entity to provide it. So I'll give you an example of how this works on the CICS side of things, and that may make a little more sense here. For CICS, we contract with Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center and Mary Greeley Medical Center to provide both voluntary as well as commitment transport. So if somebody has a mental health commitment or even a dual commitment, the sheriff's office can elect to have CIJVC provide that transportation rather than the deputies here provide it. And then CICS reimburses either CIJVC or Mary Greeley for that transportation provided. So the sheriff's office approached us regarding substance abuse transport, because right now that is all handled by the sheriff's office, comes out of their budget. So we've been talking about, could we structure something similarly here with substance abuse transport? Where could we contract with Mary Greeley and CIJVC, and then the sheriff's office, they would need to designate either entity to provide a transport. So rather than the sheriff's office then reimbursing that agency, could the funds come through our office for that transport? I think what it would do is save deputy time, would allow the deputies to be on the road out in the communities versus doing that transport. So bringing it to you, I know this is, I believe the sheriff mentioned it maybe as part of his revenue in his budget work session. I don't think we have fleshed out, in my mind, how I would envision this, if we would, I would need to talk with them more if we were to do this. For the services that our sheriff's office provides, I wouldn't see our office reimbursing the sheriff's office. Where I would see our involvement coming into play would be paying that other entity, paying CIJVC or Mary Greeley for that service. Because it's already in the sheriff's budget, is my understanding. And they're already covering for those salaries and wages with their deputy.
Thank you.
That makes sense.
It
does more to me now than it did after he was saying that, and I didn't ask about it at the time, but okay, so it would be the even though he said it was revenue to him, it's not really revenue to him, because it'd be a pass-through. Or you'd get a pass-through. Pardon?
Carl and I and a couple of sheriff's office employees and Ethan all met and talked about how this would play out and what the possibilities were going down the road. And no, there's no pass-through dollars involved. It's a matter of instead of the sheriff just doing it out of the goodness of their heart, it would be a charge to this budget, Carla's budget, for substance abuse transports to CBJ or Mary Greeley. The catcher with the sheriff is, my understanding is they're the ones that have to say, yes, we'll let somebody else do that.
They have to designate another entity to provide
that service. Right. And the money that goes to the contractor is in what budget?
We would be looking at it being
coming out of this budget, right here.
So would it come out of the sheriff's?
No.
Was there anybody getting
revenue for it, though?
I don't.
I was confused because I thought they'd get the revenue from it.
Yeah,
that's how I think I took it.
I think we probably need to flesh that out some more. In my mind, because they're both general fund dollars, right? So in my mind, it doesn't make sense for the sheriff's office to then bill us for us to reimburse them because it's general fund.
Well, you need the money.
And I'm
confused. You need the money to pay whoever's doing the transporting.
Right.
We would put that money in your budget. Where would we get that money?
Well, this is and I was just going to make that comment also. Substance abuse is one of the items that you can pay for out of the supplemental fund, and historically that's what we've done. So all of the substance abuse costs that you see here from hospital care down to court appointed is all out of the supplemental fund, because that is one of the things you can legally spend for. So what you're saying is how I thought this was supposed to work. The only role the sheriff has in it is his deputies are not tied up doing this anymore, and their office is the one saying, yes, we'll give that authority up to whoever, CIDJ or...
But the money that goes to it now is in the sheriff's budget. So he frees up deputy time.
Basically.
So we were getting it at no cost, but now we're not paying.
Exactly.
Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yeah. Okay. They're not charging
you. But
they
have one deputy right now in jail. Okay, that's jail transport, mm-hmm. though, and this is different. They
right.
will continue to do their jail transport.
Right.
But he was saying that...
Yeah. So on the sheriff's side, while it isn't revenue, it's a reduction in expenses related to whenever the deputy is making a substance abuse transfer.
The only reduction would be in fuel costs, because he's still going to have this. There might be some overtime reduction. That would be the only thing. But it's not going to be an FTE reduction. He's still got all his authorized deputies full time.
It's just that one of them is not going to be pulled off patrol to do a transport. They can actually continue to do more patrol.
Right. And so,
but I would assume they'd also
maybe identify what those costs are going to be, because
right.
they're still going to be out there working. It's just like what you said, Linda, maybe it cuts down on the fuel costs.
Yeah. He gets some time back from the transport duty.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's not really... It's only going to Cherokee or Independence or wherever occasionally.
Community and Family Resources in Fort Dodge, potentially. Some of it is transport to residential treatment programs.
Mm-hmm. So it could be all over, not just in MHR. Okay, so do you have a number? Do you have an estimate of how much money it would be?
So we looked at that, and... I will start by saying the cost could fluctuate, because it is, and this is their first time bad at it as well, but because you don't know how many commitments are going to come through, how many are going to be needed to be transported elsewhere. How our contracts currently work with through CICS is with each entity is from the point of origination of the driver's reimbursement time is from point of origination of the driver, pick up the client, take the client to their destination, and return to point of origination for that driver. And so we reimburse on an hourly rate at $50.50 per hour.
$50.
$50.50. For FY18, when we went back and looked at the information that we had, there could have been a transport, we believe, where this could have occurred within, and based on where we could determine the individual was transported to, we figured about $1,200 for that year. For FY19, we looked at numbers through the end of November, beginning of December. There could have been 7 transports based on where we could determine the individual was going to rest, maybe about $780 there.
The first one, the 8 transports, the $1,200, that was FY 18. So far this year,
we figured about $780.
So you got it, so that's the $2,000 in the transportation, and that's what you're asking.
Yeah, so I think I figured out to round out, you know, if we got this implemented yet this fiscal year, about $700, and then that's about,
So it's actual, so no fuel cost reimbursed, just the $50.50 an hour, and the fuel comes out of that?
No fuel.
Nothing, no, it's just a contract. It's
just a contract, that's it.
X number of dollars an hour.
And with Mary, really, the contract we have with them right now, it's from their staff leaving the EV. So we don't have, we'll see here, because that's a newer contract for us with CICS, but we're not paying for that driver coming from another location to pick up the client.
So
their starting point is right at the hospital.
Is it EMTs that do the transport for them?
Yeah, they have a secure vehicle with life-saving equipment.
Mm-hmm. One driver, or do they have two?
I believe one driver if it is, if they need to send a matrix or a female business, if they do.
And then with Central Iowa Juvenile Detention, too.
Yep, it's one driver. Their contract, though, is from a point of origination of that driver, so we don't necessarily always know where that driver may be coming from. They may not be located in Story County. They could be coming from Aurora.
And what are their qualifications or certifications? It's not just any old person, somebody trained.
Yes, they have trained staff to do that transport. It's also done via secure vehicle.
Okay.
Is that one 60? Did you tell me?
No. This current fiscal year it's at $50. Yeah. We changed how we were reimbursing
here, so right now. Yeah, the big savings there obviously is the fact that they're not driving from Eldora to Ames to Timbuktu back to Eldora.
So if somebody's origination was from jail, they were in jail, but they were being committed to substance abuse treatment someplace, could they be transported under this contract, or would a deputy have to transport them?
If it's under the substance abuse commitment, I would think it could fall through this. If there is probably something in regards to corrections or a correctional order or something like that, then it may be that.
Yeah, it's whether they're being still held on the charge or not.
Yeah, potentially. So we're going to talk through that.
That would be a good one to talk through.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure. Because somebody might be originating from the jail but might not be on hold for a charge anymore if they've been committed to substance abuse treatment. Okay, that's the other questions I have. Thanks. Devil's in the details. Thanks.
We found that, didn't we, Carla? The devil was. I said yes. We did find that the devil was in the details on this whole subject. Thought it'd be so easy.
So what we decided is it wouldn't be money coming out of the sheriff's budget because that would get into their actual FTEs and salary dollars. And we're not reducing his FTEs.
No, we're not.
We would just be finding the money general fund to do this, and that would help out the sheriff's office in terms of patrol. Okay. Thank you. I know we took more time, and it's not really directly related to you, but it's interrelated. So thank you. How are we feeling about the potential of doing this transportation contract? Any discussion, Matt?
No, I mean, I think some of the discussions that have come from Carla and the sheriff, fleshing a few more details out on that. I do know CIJDC does a lot of transport already and stuff, so that isn't, you know, something new that they would be potentially taking on.
I'm wondering if this would be, we'll really know if it's going to be a go by the time that we have to, by February 5th, by the time we're putting the numbers together.
My preference, we already budget some money there. Let's budget the money there and hope it goes. I mean, that's the route we're trying to go toward right now.
I think it sounds personally more cost-effective way of doing this than taking deputy time. So
Laura,
okay, yeah. Leaving it in.
I'm good with that. So 2,500 it is, right?
It was
2,000.
2,000.
And did you say, Carla, some of that is that all general fund dollars, or is some of it through CICS?
For substance abuse transport, it would be all county general
fund dollars. Okay.
Yeah. If it's a dual transport,
we can
pay for that through CICS.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
And I found the right column.
Thank you.
So on to page 73 then.
Do you want to start with revenues at all?
Revenue?
Recovery fund.
There's not much there.
Are you sure you can't raise that to $51?
Right. Okay.
Oh.
Okay, so 73 it is.
So down.
You might as well head on way on down to the bottom of that page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, office supplies. That one, our vehicle fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, she zeroed it out because of the purchase countywide. Yeah. So we purchased that vehicle in the countywide, and that's where all the reimbursement goes for that vehicle, mm-hmm. as opposed to paying for out of mental health.
And it used to be the vehicles were budgeted for in our local MHDS budget, but now the reimbursement is coming from the regional budget, so that's why you're not seeing any dollars for it.
Yeah.
Again, office supplies there, that's sharing of shredding costs, as well as shared office supplies in that. Postage and mailing, again, we're sharing expenses there. Something that just cracked up in the last few weeks, at least, and I touched base on it again yesterday, was reimbursing. So our office received new computers that were purchased, as I understand it, in FY19, and some of them were installed in FY20. But some of the costs, I believe all of the costs maybe came out of the general fund when some of the costs should have been attributed to MHDS. Mm-hmm. So we're working through that right now, and we're looking at doing a reimbursement from MHDS to the general fund for, I believe, 5 computers and a laptop. And that was roughly, I believe,
$4,500. On my desk.
And so
I'm working on it.
We need to determine yet what line item to take that out of. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that.
Very, very brief. I'm thinking of this as something like the secondary roads fund now, as far as they need to pay for it out of their own budget, so that it comes through and then gets included in all the reports so that the region is tracking it correctly. We don't like to do that necessarily, but I think it makes the most sense for the mental health fund. We've been paying for it out of the mental health fund in IT, which is a problem. I think it makes way more sense to pay for it out of the mental health fund in this budget. So I'm going to also recommend that Barb move the maintenance agreement that she has budgeted for ongoing annually into this budget. So, yeah, I'll either do probably a 260. It just makes most sense probably to do or to increase the office supplies or put an office supplies line item in here.
So we would look at a re-estimate there of $5,500 for office supplies for
FY20.
And then that could...
Yeah, and then I don't know what she... What is next year? I can't. I have to go look. Too many numbers in my head right now. So I don't remember what next year's numbers were. Yeah, they were software related.
I think it's just like
$300
for Microsoft licensing. Licensing is under the mental health direct admin services.
Yeah.
So it's very minimal.
It's very minimal, yeah.
From what I see in IT's budget, there's only one. There used to be more, right?
Yeah.
So that's
just an additional $1,800
for
FY21.
$1,800?
Well, is it $300 a piece?
No.
No,
it's a
total.
Oh, a total. Sorry, I was doing
$300. Oh, no. No.
Okay.
Now, are there any, will there be any, so they've all been the installations of computers, so there's nothing being purchased in FY21 that would?
Maybe monitors?
Monitors, that's it.
Monitors.
There's monitors in 21.
Mm-hmm.
She did mention that, so.
My little magic fingers will move all those numbers around for you.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure you were aware of why the reasoning behind moving it to this budget. It just, I mean,
cleaner.
Understand that this is the these are regional funds still, even though they're in the local budget. So, in order to make sure we account for everything correctly, we probably should just move it to their budget.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, if I did the math right there. It looks like it would move FY21 to $3,000 versus $1,500.
Probably. I'll double check those figures and get back to you. Because Barb sent me an email telling me a couple other things and included that information for what she thought mental health would be.
So move stuff from IT to mental health. Okay.
All of a sudden, this triggered in me going back to the discussion about transport, substance abuse transport, losing, but CICS handles both substance abuse and mental health. So here's my question. All right. So if it's strictly a substance abuse diagnosis, we're fine using the general fund. But if when they've got a dual diagnosis, does it automatically roll over to CICS?
If it's a commitment,
uh-huh.
To cost, our staff,
I don't think it's because we can't use general funds for mental health. I think it's because it was already recognized as a mental health expense. Does that make sense?
I think so.
And it won't. And if Carla was saying, if it's a dual diagnosis, they'll do it mental health. That will keep us from having to worry about that issue.
Okay. Thank you for now. I'll have a question after we're all done that has nothing to do with the budget right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, shared costs, phone lines, education and training. We do have a little bit there. When possible, we try to get those costs or have those costs reimbursed out of the regional budget. There are times when that's just the timing of things or when something needs to be paid that actually doesn't work. So that's why we have a little bit there. Office equipment, again, the copier costs, and then the workers' comp insurance. Then we jump down to the purchase administration. These are costs for the idea of participation in assets. And then the disbursement to the fiscal agent. And Lisa and I were just talking about this yesterday. I think I had put $1,400 in there as a re-estimate for this year, but I think Lisa's come up with a higher number there.
Right. So when I re-estimated all the numbers to see where we're actually going to be for mental health after your re-estimations mm-hmm. and everything, I put in 1.8, which left 200% of the local budget. Okay. So for the current year, that's where I was thinking we would probably be is 1.8, which I think we levy 2.1, so that makes sense. You know, how many times do I say, it's a point in time, people? Because the region is going to, or no, the finance committee is talking tomorrow. I don't know that 200% is what's going to be staying in the budgets anymore. I think that the way they want to go is 50%, which when you look at Carla's budget, over and above, the regional distribution is $450,000. That's about what her annual budget costs us. So we were keeping $800,000-$900,000 in the fund locally. Well, as opposed to doing that, it's looking like we may be keeping $250,000. As I've said numerous times to the region and to Carla, I think that's sufficient. I mean, their costs, the big costs are at the end of the fiscal year when we pay the fiscal agent. So early on in the fiscal year, as long as we have enough to make payroll, we're basically okay with this fund. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow, and we'll see what the governing board decides to do when it's all said and done. But there's a very good possibility that we will increase that 1.8 even more so that all we're going to leave in there is 50% of the next year's operating.
What we're also looking at right now, we make just one time a year, we make that disbursement to the fiscal agent. We're talking about needing to do that twice a year now to ensure that we have enough funds in the fiscal agent account.
So the finance committee is meeting tomorrow, and then we'll make a recommendation to the board, and then
you should be meeting about next Thursday, shouldn't you? Isn't that about
23rd?
So along with that, we'll also be hearing the recommendation or analyzing the recommendation of increasing to what, 26 cents
per capita.
So by the time February 5th rolls around, I will have in front of you have some way better numbers for how much we're going to levy for mental health, the recommendation, how much the recommendation is, how much we're actually going to disperse for next year and for the current year.
Any other questions before we move on to the position? Okay, we are ready. And again, just to recap, if you could, Carla, how this came up last year, what were the goals and what's going on now?
So we've been collaborating for a few years now with other agencies within Storrs County. Four agencies been staff from the City of Ames, the Salvation Army, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, they come to clean us in emergency residence projects. All of these agencies provide rent and utility assistance for those services available. So the core of our conversation has been looking at a centralized intake concept for the application for individuals applying for rent and utility assistance. How the process works now for an individual would be our office is the starting point for for folks applying for rent or utility assistance. They come into us. If we identify that we're able to assist them with the entire amount that they need, then they can just stop there with our office and we work them through the process. If they need more than what we can do or we're not able to help them at all, we then refer them on to other community agencies to get that additional assistance. And then that requires them going to the Salvation Army or Good Neighbor or the city if there's something there that they're able to apply with. So they are having to physically go to each of these offices, share their information, and request the assistance. And then they need to, if we're potentially assisting, they need to ensure that that information gets back to us so that we can wrap up their application as well. Plus, they have to come back to us then to get a claim for rent, have their landlord sign that, and bring that back to us as well. So we've been talking about, is there a way we can make this easier for folks? We know that they have limited resources. Folks are trying to work. They've got maybe child care issues, so it is challenging for them to try and get all of the places. And we don't have, each agency has their own data, but we don't have collective data. We know how many folks we've served. We don't know, I assume there are a lot of duplicate numbers because folks are having to go multiple places. In talking with the agencies that have been at the table, none of them identified interest or the ability to house the centralized intake within their agency. Many of them cited staffing short, or they would need to bring more staff on there if they don't have the ability to do it, and they didn't have the space, many of them, either to house somebody or to have a lobby for people to wait within and things like that. So we did identify, and I expressed interest in our office. I know that we have the office space. We have lobby. I know that we have the support staff to help with this, but what my concern is, I think we would need an additional staff person full time to be able to implement this. We know that there are other programs going right now for folks who are homeless, a centralized intake concept for them. That they can work through to either get into shelter or get into maybe rapid rehousing, a more long-term program. So we know that centralized intake is for those folks, but we don't have it on the homeless prevention side of things, trying to keep somebody from being dangerous. So that's really what this is looking at. We would be able to spend more time with individuals. Right now, when somebody comes in, you know, we process their application. If they kind of divulge the more information, we can share resources and things with them, but we don't really get into necessarily what's going on with them. And we're looking at 15 minutes with them at that point in time. What we envision is this position being able to spend some more time, collect some more information, and be able to get them connected to other community resources and that, with the hope that we're offering enough support to them that maybe they'll be able to end this cycle of needing utility assistance.
So I think it's still fairly short term,
right?
More than 15 minutes. But, you know, it would still be one of the things I think that that Carla has in here, too, is an assessment type thing. We'd like to look at some kind of tool, basically, to use with these folks when they come in and kind of identify, you know, what their major barriers are and that kind of thing. Some of those other programs, like I spoke with Primary Healthcare this week. They did get a grant of some sort to work with street homeless, basically. Sounds like a really decent program, so I'm super excited to hear how it goes. Miguel, who I talked to there, but that's going to be a year long, and they'll help get people, you know, people that are homeless, you know, into an actual apartment, and it pays for their rent for a year. They expect the person to contribute. If it's $20 a month, it's $20 a month. But they're going to help these people find jobs and do that kind of thing. So totally different from what we do. Could one of our people that come in end up being homeless? for sure. You know, some people do have eviction notices when they come to see us and stuff like that. But like the rapid rehousing, those types of things, I can see our housing coordinator or our person, our centralized intake person, you know, sometimes maybe having to refer to those type of things, mm-hmm. and let them know about those resources.
So can you explain a little bit how, because I do know that the Emergency Residence Project does have that rapid rehousing. How do you envision this as being kind of different? Because I know that's, they work with transient or homeless individuals and try to help them to get into housing. How are you seeing this role?
Most of our folks already have a place to live. They just can't pay for it.
Okay.
So it's to keep them from losing their home.
Keep them from losing their home.
Absolutely. So it's not that, and hopefully get their feet on the ground enough that they don't have to come back to us every 6 months.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
So how long do you envision after they come in and it's an hour, and then they don't bring all their documents in, you know, so then you meet with them another hour, you know, later on. Okay. So, but it's still, that's still a short interim compared to what's being provided in the rapid, through the Two Rivers and or rapid rehousing, something like that. Okay. So now you've gotten them money, or you've referred them out to Good Neighbor or whatever, so that they manage to keep the lights on, or they've got rent for a month, et cetera. Then are we done with them?
Our hope would be that we'll continue to be that resource for them. Something comes up that they need, we want to be that point of contact for them. We envision, though, it may, I don't think it's going to be a long time that we would be working with someone, like a year long.
Yeah.
I mean, the potential could be there if that was really needed. But I mean, I think so we get into this, we'll need to flesh that out a little bit more. But I'm envisioning maybe a couple of months, you know, we could do callbacks, did you get connected, did you make it to this appointment, you know, that kind of
thing. So, how would that differ pretty much from the service coordinator job? Because I pulled it off just so I could compare, you know, okay. And other than, you know, the description under general definition of work for the service coordinator talks about based on assessment of client strengths, needs, et cetera, this job description says at risk of becoming homeless to increase ability to maintain permanent housing and ensure housing stability. A lot of times they're the same thing. Right.
And
okay, that's.
In those job descriptions, I mean, quite honestly, they mirror one another. They feel like, you know, I would envision the person in this position is going to be similar to our service coordinators that we currently have. You know, doing similar lines of work. The focus may be just a little bit different for the staff rent and utilities. Those folks who are initially coming to us for those reasons, but then we're maybe identifying other things.
So how many people do you think you would serve in a year based on what you're currently seeing? Where is it in here? I don't know.
Well, so we'd be the starting point for folks, certainly. You know, when...
But you're the starting point now.
Yeah. I mean, they go to other places first before they come to us.
Okay.
Occasionally, yeah, occasionally they get their needs met before they even make it to us. I don't know how that happens or why that happens, because a lot of the your St. Thomas and places like that want our decision form,
right?
You know, either the denial or that we can help with a portion of it. But sometimes, yeah, people will come in and they'll say, oh, no, last month, you know, ERP helped me or Good Neighbor, and that was enough.
Oh.
Okay.
So it's not an absolute requirement that they start with you.
No, but I think with this in place, that is what our collaboration has been about, that's where they would send people to come.
Well, and I would, I'm going to only make the assumption, but I know, like NAMI, for example, did some emergency assistance that they would help. Could be a phone, could be rent, could be utilities, could be whatever. And I know that they always asked, had they been to you first on their one, because they may have so many other needs and we're just the Band-Aid. For the larger portion, we wanted them to start with you and then get the referral to NAMI to say, okay, yes, we can help with all of this, but they've got this immediate thing that you couldn't get something going for another month or two, but they have something that's urgent right now.
So let me kind of run through this. So let's say, Erin, you're the coordinator. I come to you and I say, I have this need. You say, well, we can help you with this much of it, but the rest, we can't do the rest of it. Instead of you telling me, go there, you have all the criteria for those places. You put out a request.
That's where
we would put out the request, and then they would say, yes, we could help. So you would be doing maybe through phone, email, something very simple with your contacts.
We're working on a solution for that, and that's a database. To me, this is exciting because, I mean, we've been working on this all of last year, pretty much, I would say, trying to identify a database. We have been working with Iowa State Association of Counties, with ITAC staff, to see if our current database that we use, the Community Services Network, the events, all regions in the state use it, but one region. And we talked with them, are there enhancements that could be made to the event that we could use it for our purposes here? And they jumped on board with it. They have provided mock-ups of what this could look like within the event. They came up and met with Aaron and I, as well as our community agencies that we've been collaborating with, showed the tool to them. They provided positive feedback on it. But how the system would work is somebody comes into our office, we're able to enter their information into the system, and then we can choose based on the criteria that we know of the other agencies. I think this could be a fit for Salvation Army, Good Neighbor. We'll put that in the system, and then they would get an alert. They could then get into CSN, look at that client information, determine if it's appropriate for them, and then they can offer their pledge back within the system.
And then our shared database to communicate all that and keep track of it. So it would be, so ERP would be involved if it's a partner of St. Thomas City?
Good Neighbor. No.
Not so, NAMI?
Well, we have to narrow down.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have to get MOUs in place and everything.
Yeah.
So till we get to the sign in the line. But the core agencies have been the Salvation Army, Good Neighbor, Emergency Residence Project, the City of Ames. The City of Ames, they have a whole set of other criteria that they have to follow due to their federal funding. So Vanessa is still going to have to work through her paperwork.
I mean, St. Thomas came to the table for quite a long time, but the hurdle that we have kind of with the faith-based organizations, and I realize Good Neighbor is a combination of all that, but your folks like Christ Community and St. Thomas want to have that face-to-face with those folks for whatever reason, you know. So I envision, though, I kind of think that they'll come on board eventually once they figure out, you know, how this is working and how it's working for people. Because honestly, to have somebody go all the way out to Christ Community Church is crazy. Right. Yeah. And
sorry, I don't have a car. I don't have money.
Right. But they continue to give folks money. They're very dependable in that, you know, thing. So,
and they've been at the table in any conversation.
Yeah.
So they're aware of what's going on, whether or not they jump on board.
Right.
I understand the need. I think I'm on board with you on that. And okay. My concern is maybe with keeping it with us instead of paying on an RFP status to some other agency, because we'd be RFPing out for basically a salary. They'd be paying a salary to somebody, so that would be eliminated. So then you're looking at, do they have the capacity room-wise and support staff-wise? But if my thought is this too narrow? All right. So, especially when you're talking about, well, the faith-based communities still want to probably, at least for a while, sit face-to-face with people. So, because there is a problem with people getting, oh, no, you have to go here next, referred out. So, I mean, I have that. So, are we the appropriate place to do that? And given, thank you, Carla, you sent me a screenshot kind of thing of the database. It looks very, very comprehensive. I mean, you know, even CakeWorker, and there's a lot of information that can go in this database. That can we share that information with outside of us? And so are we, for the dollars, in keeping it in-house, are we meeting the best demand? Or do we look at, like ERP is possibly talking to Anna Wim and Amos is trying to set that up, right? But that's for following Housing First, which is a different program. Would there be leftover capacity if we put it out for RFP and funded the same amount of money for them to pick this up as a sideline? So that's really where I am, okay, on this, is that there's no question you guys are putting good work on it. There's no question that you get the calls every day, right? So...
I've got a thought about that. Sometimes programs morph. You start them out at one place, and you can find out after a while this might work better this way or that way, or it might be combined with another program. The reason I think community service is a place to start it is because you said a lot of times these other agencies, helping agencies, will say, have you been to the county? Have you been to community service? So if people are kind of looking at us as the front door anyway,
okay,
I can see where it makes sense to start it with us. I would say you probably don't know how this is going to end up. You know, it may be a project that a year from now the decision might be do it differently, move it over here. It might mean, that an employee needs to, go with a program or find someplace else, something like that. But you've done a lot of work on it.
I also think if you look at the Story County Resource Guide, a lot of their narrative in there will say, like, a neighbor, have they gone to CICS first? I mean, so it's already kind of out there. Now, again, mm-hmm. It's just people are doing it, but it's kind of already in their protocols. And that's why you are getting people to come to you, because it's already been told that folks should start with you first. And as you said, they need to get that denial letter before they come back to somewhere else. I also looked at kind of the consistency of your office that could potentially provide it, just because you don't know if some of the other agencies, great agencies, you see some agencies that come and some that go, so that would be a concern of, okay, they've bought in, maybe they've got a management changeover where you're kind of that consistent entity that's out there. And then lastly, I think my bigger question of it all is if we approve this, and if you went ahead and built further built your database, is how easily would that be to transfer over after you've invested so much into that? Are you then kind of losing something to somebody else? Is that going to be their huge startup cost is to develop that? And I do, for most people, for sharing information, you get them to sign off that it's okay to share information.
Yeah,
That's what you'd have to do.
And for when we think about the CSN network, I don't think I can speak to how transferable would that be for us to transfer that on.
Right.
Because we're logging into that system as our general assistance program. Mm-hmm. We're entering mm-hmm. information. Now, the other agencies, they're going to be able to look into the system, but there is information within there that's going to be locked down. They're not going
right,
to be
right, right.
In, so there are going to be restrictions and parameters in place so that they can see everything within that system. So if this were to go to another agency, I don't know if they would be able to start off with using CSN or if they would need to find something.
To develop something. And I think that's kind of what I meant.
It would just be, it could be rebuilt in a simple database of some sort.
So I have a question for Alyssa.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Related to talking about if it starts out here, but then a year from now we discover this is it should not be here. Maybe, and I wrote down lists of pros and cons, including other agencies are going to have more capacity to maybe do it from noon to 8. Maybe those are going to be end up being better hours for people. And who can better handle if somebody walks in with a mortgage? And I mean, all because we're talking rent, but all those things. Now back to Alyssa. So when we hire somebody into this position, a year from now, we realize that it's not the fit we thought it was going to be with existing services and community services. And then what, we just lay that person off?
We have a procedure for it. Yeah, you'd eliminate the position. We've eliminated positions before.
Okay.
It's not a union position, so I don't have to work through the union to do that. But it would be, you give them notice. I think our policy, mm-hmm. I think it's just 60 days. I'd have to double check, but we have a reduction in workforce policy.
Is it possible to, you know, approve the position with a temporary employee? I mean, is a year too long for a temp? In other words, you interview and you're hiring someone knowing that at the end of the year, or they're always, they're temporary, they're not guaranteed employment beyond that year, but then we have a better idea.
Well, they're all at will. There's no real benefit
I'm just asking.
There's no difference with whether it would be a full-time employee. You're going to have to provide benefits because you know.
Okay.
In looking into it, they're going to work more than that 1,560 hours in a full year.
And
I don't have that seasonal thing. The other thing is, you know, if you think temporary, then we don't have to worry about it. There's still unemployment. They've worked their mm-hmm. base period in here and their look-back period. So the length of it, it's not beneficial. There's no benefit of the county saying it's temporary.
And I wasn't looking so much for our benefit if I looked at that poor person that a year from now might not have a job.
No, okay. Well, I might be able to apply it, but I don't think it will end up that way.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that's with any position, any new position,
it can happen
with
any position.
Okay.
But you could have that risk if you RFP'd out to somewhere and an agency hires somebody and that person then leaves. You know, because then you'd have a whole new person that would have to get up to speed on this. You're not guaranteed by the agency who either does it or has the RFP or the person that is hired for the position.
I wondered if you're going to be building a caseload from scratch.
You know, you had asked earlier about numbers.
Yes.
So I was just looking at our general assistance numbers for FY19. I believe we assisted 169 families from individuals, but we referred, we had over 1,000, I think it was 1,026 referrals out. So, and those could be duplicates, you know, individuals that have come in multiple times. So,
say that again. You said you had how many, the whole thing?
So we assisted, I believe it was 169 families and individuals in FY19 where we provided financial assistance for rent and utilities. That would include burial, any transportation. But then we referred out, so our denials, we had about, I believe it was 1,026.
Okay.
So
we have anywhere from 80 to 100 denials a month.
So the denials means they didn't qualify for services, so you sent them elsewhere.
Okay.
So how would that fit with, so if you did a partial funding of their need, but couldn't do the whole need, would they be considered a referral out?
They're not falling in those denials, they're falling in the assistance. And we do have some folks that don't return,
your head.
I mean, we have a handful of those
every
month.
Yep, pretty much.
I'd say 4 to 9, maybe.
I do that report every month. But, yeah, it's in the single digits usually. But and we call those pending, did not return. You know, we give them 15 days to get all the things back to us, and some of them just don't return.
Say somebody comes in, they're new, they've lost their job, and so they're at risk all of a sudden, and they haven't had any savings. And in the process, this housing service coordinator or whatever, okay, this person. Okay, so she or he realizes that this is a client that's going to need more help. It turns out they are. They have a chronic mental illness and it's going to need more supports. Then do we just turn it over to one of the service coordinators then? And the service coordinator will take it all over, and meanwhile the housing service coordinator moves on to the next one. Okay.
Can we do that now for folks to come in for general assistance? So we can tell if they're emotional during that visit and stuff. We can just ask if there's a need for mental health services. We can give them to the service coordinator, or we give them information about the outreach. Yeah, I would envision us passing that on then.
Okay, because that's what I'm kind of back to. So we know, these are old numbers, but we know that in the last point in time, a year ago, they only truly found about 15 people in the county they could locate in January who were actually, would identify as homeless. But we know that ISU has done studies, and there's a couple hundred at least students who are couch-surfing, who are at risk. And then they've got this at the schools, a community school at various times, think there's 200 kids or so, right? They've got their own coordinator out there to try and help, right? So so these people who'd be coming to you would be the people who maybe have not been known, like I identified that person before, right? They are just hanging on. And all of a sudden something has tipped. And they're coming to you. You're helping get information for some of the other agencies, and then you're determining if your service coordinators need to step in or if you're going to refer out. Maybe there's a little bit of tracking for a couple months, but then move on. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can see where this is a place that nobody has capacity for right now. I mean, you know, and still do their other types of work where they're from.
And I would make the assumption, too, that just the location that you're at, because yeah. you do have DHS at that location, that if someone is needing services that DHS would provide, you could connect them right there as well.
In DHS refers.
Right.
We have an excellent location for all sorts of
things. No, I mean, and
we're
pretty
lucky that we're right there. So cool.
Yeah, and I just know of families that I've worked with in the past that, oh gosh, they didn't know this was, you know, it was hard to see someone at, you know, DHS or the time that you came in for your walk-in or whatever, that if you have somebody there to help do the coordination and get that set up, could really help, you know, eliminate some of the challenges that families or that individual continues to have.
We have talked about you had mentioned like hours of service and maybe like later in the evening mm-hmm. or something. And we have talked about that, and we talked about that as our core group too, of trying to make it so at least maybe one time a week there are some evening hours available for those folks who are working in that. So that would be an adjustment for our office. Of course, right now we go to 30. I would envision us wanting to have two people in the office.
Oh, yeah.
Having just
I want to thank you for sending me the additional information and your notes, because it really helped me focus. Because when I got down into the job description, then I'm reading, you know, going back and forth, and this helps. And I know you guys didn't see this. I don't think that this is the flow chart. Well, I had talked to Sandra about a couple of my questions and stuff, but I will be happy to pass them down. Okay. So, but thank you, because they were helpful in helping me focus.
Me too.
Is there anything else?
Yeah.
No. Erin?
No.
Just to follow up, so why we have not come to the board yet, and I think I noted it in my letter, for approval of the position is we've been working on this database, because I really feel like we need this database in order to make this work. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we're calling, we're faxing, and it just doesn't feel like it would work very well. So we're waiting to hear from ISAC on when they enter. on the project, and they'll send it out then for testing, and then when we'll actually get it up and going. So I'm kind of waiting for that piece of information to then step things out further.
So Lisa, right now, we know it's in for fiscal year 20, all right? And do we have it also still in for fiscal year 21? So really, it's no difference in our figures. It's looking to finally, when you come back, say, are you willing to go ahead and do this now and commit to it?
Okay.
Okay.
Any questions to us?
Thank you.
Yes.